At 8:03, we're going to let the minutes show that Representative Newman is here, Representative Salmon, Representative Ledoux, Co-Chair Olson, and Co-Chair Thomas. We're going to bring up House Bill 49, since the sponsor is here waiting and has greater things to do, I'm sure. And at this time, we'll turn it over to Representative Roakberg. Well, before we go, you want to come in and sit down? You got a chair up here? We have a chair up here anymore.
Don't let him vote.
Yeah. Do whatever he wants to do. Okay, and I'm going to show that Representative Moses joined us. Representative Roakberg, good morning.
Morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Representative Norman Roakberg from District 27 in Anchorage. And I have introduced before you House Bill 49. It's a propitious number. I like that. From the 49th state. Mr. Chairman, the bill before you is a statement of what I believe is should be legislative policy and is a first small step in the reinstitution of municipal aid grants to the local governmental units from around the state. For a number of years, the legislature provided through municipal revenue sharing and the Safe Cities programs a substantial amount of monies to local government to help them in their operations. Unfortunately, due to the exigencies of budgetary requirements, we've had to reduce that amount over the years, and it was ultimately zeroed out by, I believe, the act of veto from the third floor. But, Mr. Chairman, what has come to light is the significant plight and distress and the problems in local governments throughout the state because of this. Therefore, I had developed this concept to make at least a modest step, I believe, in the right direction of reinstituting a modest amount of assistance, particularly for those very small communities. I selected a $50,000 minimum grant and spread it throughout the entire state to all 163 municipal governments in the state, therefore avoiding the problems of trying to argue the allocation and looking at it from an equitable standpoint. Mr. Chairman, you'll notice the fiscal note is significant. Even with this relatively small amount of money, it still will cost some $8.15 million. Mr. Chairman, you will hear testimony, I think, very appealing testimony in terms of the plight and the fact that our small cities are in crisis throughout the state. From the Alaska Municipal League, I believe there's some other folks online this morning. And I will wrap up by saying, I believe this committee of all the committees should recognize the problems in our small communities. And this, I believe, is a small step, again, that we should take. And I would also recognize Representative Moses and his longtime advocacy for municipal dividends and support for local governments. And I appreciate him being here today on this. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I can answer any questions, I'll be glad to do so.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Roakberg, this $50,000 or $8.1 million, where does this money come from?
It will come from the general fund, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Has this been presented in the past?
Well, as I indicated, historically we've had two major programs provided for allocation among small communities, but those are still on the books, but ultimately were zeroed out. And I might point out, Mr. Chairman, when I did develop the bill, I chose to basically make it very simple and not try to fund the existing programs, basically creating a new simplified grant system here to avoid the problems we might have in trying to make those allocations again. So there is historic precedent for this type of activity.
Thank you.
Questions? Representative Salmon, you had your armor.
Yes. I have a question on some of the villages are being left out, like about 66 villages. throughout the state of Alaska, and I was kind of wondering why are they left out?
Through the chair, Representative Salmon, there's a list in your package of, excuse me, of the 163 municipalities that are incorporated under the state statute as local governments. That's the medium and method that has been used in the past and is used in this legislation. So they're legally recognized entities under the state statute. And that's all the villages and local governments that have formal state legal foundations.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a comment. There are 66 villages left out of this this bill, and you know, we're under the 66 villages, which, you know, about four or five of mine left out. We need to recognize that they're under the state law too. I mean, we abide by the state of Alaska. We're in the state of Alaska, and I think they should be entitled to this program too. I mean, I don't see why we have to leave them out just because the state doesn't recognize them. I mean, we've been living in the state of Alaska for time and since time began, probably, you know. So I think we need to see that we cover the state of Alaska rather than just the people that are recognized by the state.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, I think one reason that we've had the municipal revenue sharing programs and aid in the past is that we want to encourage the maximum amount of local government and local participation. As a matter of fact, the framers of our Constitution in Article 10 gave substance to that by encouraging local government. And that's what we've done in the past, is to invite those communities who wish to operate under our statutes to organize and take responsibility for their local operations. I would point out in the bill, I think section subsection C indicates that if under federal law you're an Indian reserve that existed prior to time, that you would also be included. So if you had reservation status like Metlakatla, you'd also be included, and it recognizes that.
Questions? Representative Huber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Roekberg, or Representative Roekberg, what would these 66 communities or villages have to do to become part of this process?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I'm not by no means an expert in local government or municipal statutes. I believe they'd have to incorporate it at one level or another to be recognized. And frankly, I'm not sure what that entails or how difficult it is. Clearly, to be able to operate as a municipal government under Alaska statutes, there are burdens and requirements that have to be met. And that's basically the rationale of why we've introduced this bill to give aid. However, Mr. Chairman, I might point out that we do have expert testimony, and the there are representatives here from the Department of Community Commerce, Community and Economic Development, and Division of Community Advocacy that might be more able to answer that question.
Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
Thank you. Through the chair, well, I share some of Representative Salmon's concerns. I'm just wondering whether or not one could include areas which function as municipalities, which provide, you know, a certain number of services which are generally thought to be municipal services, and whether those areas could be included if they are in fact doing that sort of thing.
Well, through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I believe the department might be better able to answer that, but I would say this. This is a statement of policy in large part. It also has I think an extraordinarily large fiscal note. So there has to be a recognition of real politic here of what can be, what can happen, and what kind of progress we can make. So I would just caution the committee, and albeit I think it's a very valuable discussion to have, but we have to be look at the potentiality of success, and I think it's important that we make a statement, and we also articulate our policy through this legislation that we want to support local governments, and we want to encourage the organization of local government. And I think we do that with this bill.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may be so bold as to comment to address Representative Ledoux, with my opinion on that is a lot of the, I think that could really open up a lot of areas or a can of worms for the state, you know, to just allow people to say, well, I want to say that we're going to organize and then be able to apply for these grants. I do feel that our state does recognize the need for organization of cities, and that rules should be followed. Thank you.
Any more questions? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I look forward to the witness testimony here, and thank you for taking up this legislation today.
Okay, we have some people online. If you don't mind, we'll do them out. People out in line first. We'll start with. What's that?
I might make a suggestion. If Mr. Ritchie's here from AML, if you want to
start with
give
him.
You a broad overview, and then it might be helpful.
Yeah, he's the only one that signed up in person here. So, Kevin Ritchie, come up and state your name, affiliation, and give your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kevin Ritchie. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Municipal League, and I. There's several pieces of paper on your desk, which you don't have to read through now. I'm putting them down as resources, but the 3 points that I'd like to make today is, number one, that rural Alaska is really in crisis. Number two, that financially they really have no way out, and I'll talk about that, other than some support from the state of Alaska. And that three, there are some very significant state financial impacts beyond the crisis of service that's actually happening in our rural communities in Alaska, which is a very serious thing. The points are just to frame a picture. We've got a number of letters from municipalities that explain the impacts to the communities in Alaska, and there are several people online that can sort of paint a better picture of individual communities, but the problems in rural Alaska, and I've got a short handout that kind of summarizes my testimony. You know, extremely high energy costs. We have communities that are paying $5.15 at the pump for gas, more or less, but really a tremendous amount. And that, coupled with extremely high unemployment in rural areas, third, virtually no tax base. And just as an example, I ran the numbers on one of the communities in crisis that's in a borough, and the total value of that community is $3.5 million, the entire value of the community for taxable purposes. And the problem with that is, even if you levied a property tax in a community like that, number one, it wouldn't create very much money. Number two, because of the patterns of land ownership, most of the people in that community don't have taxable land, or a very large percentage of them don't have taxable land. So you'd have this system where some people are paying taxes and some people aren't. And so really, property tax is not a way out for rural Alaska. The fourth point is that most communities in rural Alaska are taxing themselves. More than 100 communities have a sales tax. Most of the small communities do have a sales tax. And Ambler, for example, they're working on raising their local sales tax, but their local sales tax, 1% nets $7,500 a year. So last year they had $40,000 in revenue sharing or shared revenues from the state. Their insurance may have gone up $5,000 or $10,000, or fuel costs may have gone up a lot depending on the community. Other things, but just say, for example, that Ambler has a $60,000 deficit to fill. to fill it with sales tax, they'd bring their sales tax up to 10 or 11%, which is a lot. I mean, that'd be the highest sales tax in the United States, and there just isn't that much commerce that goes on in small communities. And with an 11 or 12% sales tax, I think you could suggest there'd be a lot less commerce that goes on. You know, people just wouldn't buy there. But the last point, which is almost seems counter to these, is these are very strong, very stable communities. And when you talk about strong, stable communities, many and probably most of the rural Alaska communities have existed not only for hundreds of years, but thousands of years. And so very strong, culturally rich part of Alaska that simply doesn't have the ability to provide their own police protection with local revenues, their own road maintenance, and so on. And so that is a crisis. In the last year, just talking with the department, nine cities out of Alaska's 146 cities are no longer functioning. I mean, they just can't provide service. They don't hold meetings. They don't have employees. They've just gone home. 17 cities are in very deep debt. 39 cities have terminated key local services, and that's police, road utility facility maintenance, things that are considered absolutely crucial to municipal life or community life anywhere. Per the Alaska Municipal League Joint Insurance Association, which provides insurance to most of the cities, or many of the cities in Alaska, the insurance for 10 cities has been canceled over the past year. 33 are on month-to-month payment plans because they can't afford the insurance costs. Now, so that's a fairly significant picture of part of our state is in crisis. The state impacts, and when Representative Roekberg talked about the fiscal note on the bill, a very real picture of what is happening is these communities cannot afford to buy municipal insurance for the things that they're doing. In the case where a police officer, village public safety officer, somebody working for the municipality is involved in an accident, a citizen gets hurt, this community has no insurance, virtually no assets. And if it's in the unorganized borough, I think there's an especially strong feeling on the part of the department and the municipal league that a jury would always look for a deep pocket. These communities are mostly in the legislature's unorganized borough, and the legislature is obligated to provide services that it deems necessary in the unorganized borough. So there could be at least an impact from one uninsured loss that could be equal to the cost of this bill, which could actually make life better for many, many people in our state. And then the last point I wanted to make simply is that there's been a growing movement of people from rural Alaska to urban Alaska. We feel that part of that is lack of services, lack of public safety, lack of transportation services, lack of airports being open when they need to be, and so on. And it's not reasonable to think that people in this day and age would live someplace where they wouldn't have access in any way. They couldn't get out of the airport if they had a medical emergency, for example. So as people move into urban Alaska, they're probably moving without jobs. And then the commerce that creates maybe one out of five jobs in urban Alaska is going to go down. So you're seeing a situation where Alaska is really a big economic network, and these villages and communities are a very important part of that economic network. So besides all of the other reasons for supporting cities and communities in rural Alaska, that's certainly an important economic one for all of the urban areas. And so the bottom line is that revenue sharing has been a program since 1969. And after 1969, there was actually 84 of our 146 cities organized because they saw a way to make a better life. That program has been in place since 1969, and this is the first year that that program hasn't been in place, hasn't been funded. It's actually still on the books, but it hasn't been funded this year. The governor's bill to provide an interim program this year, plus a bill like this, and the Alaska Municipal League will support strongly any bill that helps this problem. but a bill like this could provide a lifeline to buy insurance, to buy fuel, to provide some level of support to the public safety officer, to provide some road maintenance. So it's a key bill for, or it's a key need for rural Alaska. So anyway, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for the time to make that explanation.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Olson.
Mr. Ritchie?
Yes, sir.
Out of the 66 villages, how many of them are participating in the municipal league or the joint insurance arrangement, or are any of them?
Through the chair, the 66 villages, as villages, if they're not municipalities, cannot by state law participate in the insurance program. And that actually has been a goal of the Alaska Municipal League Joint Insurance Association, is to be able to allow tribal councils to, or other nonprofits in the unorganized borough, to buy insurance. But currently it's restricted to municipalities and school districts under state law.
Are they participating in the municipal league, though?
Through the chair, no. At this point, full members in the municipal league are defined as cities or boroughs.
That's what I was getting at, thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, let the record show that we've been joined by Representative Cotton, Representative Cisna. Any more questions? I could see your hand there. No?
Representative, yes, Mr. Chair, I would just like to state that, I do think this is a good bill. I do recognize the need to try and do what we can to support particularly the smaller communities, and also suggest that the areas that aren't included in this, try and work together with the state as much as we can so that they can be included in this. But I certainly don't see that that's not a reason why we shouldn't pass this out, and would strongly encourage my fellow committee members to vote for this.
Representative Salmon, you had a question?
I have a question. Is that, Mr. Chairman, it's just a little comment I'd like to make, because it seems like the federal government recognized, the other 66 villages that are recognized. I mean, whether you're city council or whether you're tribal government, I mean, they're trying to achieve the same end product, it's for the betterment of the village. And I've been on the Fort Yukon City Council for a number of years, and the mayor of Fort Yukon for a number, I think 1 year, and we fought for the same thing in the city council as we did in the tribal council. And I don't see how we could differentiate the two. And knowing the federal recognized the 229 communities, I mean, what's the difference between tribes and city? We're still the people. I see some village council that there are some white people in there, I mean, we don't differentiate them. They're fighting for the common cause of the people. And that's where I disagree with the bill. On one hand, I'll give a Kerry scenario here. But on the other hand, when you leave 66 villages out, I disagree with that fact, I think it's a good bill for the 163 people, communities. But when you leave 66 communities out, and it's not a very good bill for those 66 communities, and that's a statement. I'd like to see the committee could look at little more closely if we could maybe make some kind of amendment or CS or whatever we could put in there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No questions of Ritchie. We'll go online here because you're the only one, unless there's somebody in the audience wants to testify. Seeing none, we'll go online here to Bethel, to David or Dave Trapman. Trapham. You online there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Your name and affiliation?
My name is David Trantham, Jr. I'm a member of the Bethel City Council. I'm also on the board of directors of AML for Region 9.
You have testimony?
Yes, I do. I do not have written testimony. basically, I think House Bill 49 is a good start. I think it has one weakness. It does not include all communities in the state of Alaska. There's roughly 66 communities that are not included. These folks are Alaska citizens, citizens of the United States, and it's always good when people are treated equal. Many of these communities have looked forward to tribal governments for support since revenue sharing kind of dried up, disappeared. The cost of living in all of these communities in Western Alaska is extremely high. For example, here in Bethel, we have to pay $3.59 for a gallon of gas and $2.99 for heating fuel to heat our homes and run our generators. There's a fuel surtax on everything we ship into this area. Many of the communities are trying to help themselves, support themselves through sales tax. For example, the city of Bethel has a 5% sales tax. It has a 5% gaming tax. It has a alcohol user fee of 5%. It has an 8% bed tax. It has a 4% throughput fuel coming across the Bethel port. Many user fees. This type of activity and taxation is going on in many of the smaller communities. The high cost of living, high cost of energy hurts us when the price of North Slope fuel, crude oil, goes up. It impacts us out here. This is a very, very good start, in my opinion. I have telephone conversations with many of the mayors of this region. They're all hurting. If there's any way that you can provide a little bit of financial support to the communities, that would be greatly appreciated. And I will stand by for any questions that anyone has for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Hearing none. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good day.
Good day. We'll go to Wilbur Nepanyuk, Koyuk Mayor. Are you there?
Good morning. Yes, this is Wilbur Nepanyuk, the mayor of the city of Koyuk. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate what Representative Rokeberg had introduced to the legislation. We are in a bind today, you know, as far as being able to survive as a municipal government. We have been working for many years now, having revenue sharing coming in and help to offset expenses that we have, the insurance costs and the high fuel costs being the two of the greatest dollar amount. But we're at a point today where even though our taxes, we are looking to raise our taxes and also increase our monthly utility rates, the money coming in is not even enough to be able to function as a government. Whenever the dollar amount is brought up for the revenues coming in, there are more expenses that come up along the way. We end up paying a lot more than what we did a few years ago. So trying to be able to survive today in these communities is very much a challenge. I hear of many rural governments having had to close their doors. I am hoping that I won't have to get to that point. but it's not too far on the horizon. The challenge today that we have, since revenue sharing is no longer in existence today, is trying to come up with the money to be able to pay for the bills, the ever-increasing amount of bills that we have to pay on a monthly basis. The insurance costs, our workman's comp being one of the highest, greatest dollar amount. To try to be able to provide just the very basic needs in my community is very much a challenge today. You know, and I look at, okay, where is that money coming from? I have this bill to pay. How are we going to do it? You know, it's right now, our government in the city of Corey is a big question mark. Will we be here tomorrow? Will we be here next week? Will we be here next month? So going from day to day, you know, we just hope that when I walk into the office every morning that nothing drastic happens, you know, we're all of a sudden had to close by the end of the day. So even though we are looking to increase our taxes and our utility rates, the money coming into the people in the community is still not there. You know, first of all, we depend on the very residents of our community to be able to pay what they are receiving so that we can be able to function and operate as a city administration and utility operation. So when they have no money coming in, they're asking themselves, where am I going to get my money to pay my monthly bill? And if that monthly bill doesn't come into the city of Corey, no, we are passed on, that question is passed on to us too. So to the very important aspect or very important part of our community to be able to function as a whole comes right down to a resident of the community. And not having a lot of jobs in the community is really hard for a lot of people to try to stay caught up on their bills so that we can have that revenue coming in. Eventually, we would like to see us get to the point, our city government get to the point where we are self-supporting. But something like this House Bill 49 is very important in order for us to try to say, okay, let's get this together and get it organized. We may not be able to get it sometime later on in the future, but that's a start right now where we can say, okay, I have this amount of money here. I can take care of this. So it's very much a challenge out here in these small communities. And I do appreciate what the legislature, what Kevin Ritchie is doing, Representative Wilkberg, trying to speak for our smaller communities so that no more will have to go under. No more city governments will have to close their doors. And I appreciate the time, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to speak.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? None? Thank you. Anybody else online? Anybody else called in? Anybody from the audience wish to come up in? No? Questions then? You had one.
I had an answer.
You did?
Yeah.
I have one of the department, somebody from the Commerce Department come up here. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Sally Sadler, Legislative Liaison, Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development.
Thank you. Question I have is, and it's one that we were talking about up here, is that there may be a problem giving money to unorganized communities if one wished to amend the bill. Is that true, or do you know is there a problem?
Mr. Chairman, right now my understanding is the legislation calls for the funding to go to municipalities. I do know we've got Dan Bockhorst online who might be able to answer some questions in terms of what needs to happen to help an area become a community.
The question is there a problem giving money to unorganized municipalities under state law right now? Or?
Right now, I'm not aware of any problem. It's a legislative policy call that I think you have, but I'd like to maybe double check with Bill Rolfson, who's our local government specialist.
Okay.
I could.
Bill,
this won't be without.
Mr. Chairman, Bill Rolfson, employee of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. There's no problem. Historically, revenue sharing did provide payments to unincorporated communities, as well as the capital matching grant program. Under revenue sharing, the amount going to the unincorporated communities was not at the level provided to the city governments, but we did fund those communities.
That was the other question is, if I remember right, it was like 5-1 or something like that. So under this proposal, what would they have gotten in the old days? Is like, if it was 50,000, the organized would have got like 5,000 or?
Well, the last year under the revenue sharing program in FY03, they received approximately $3,500. And in FY04, in the transition, the temporary fiscal relief program, that program provided each small city or each incorporated municipality a minimum of $40,000, while the unincorporated communities each received
$3,500. Okay. Representative Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if this is a gentleman who can answer this question or who can, but I was looking through the list here, and I just kind of noticed there's some areas in my community that I had a question on of why they're not on the list. It would be Trapper Creek and Talkeetna. Now, Talkeetna is certainly a city. Why would they not be on the list?
Through the chair, Representative Newman. Historically, ever since 1969, unincorporated communities within organized boroughs did not receive funding directly from the state. The funding that went to the organized borough, if they chose to pass some of that money through to the unincorporated communities within their area, that was a local decision. But historically, we only funded unincorporated communities with outside any organized borough. I guess it was just a policy decision, but that's the way it's been since the inception of the program.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So are these communities getting any type of aid through the state at all?
The Chair, Representative Newman, are you speaking of the communities within organized?
Like Talkeetna.
No, they're not.
Okay. Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess to just follow up on Representative Newman's question, because I didn't understand completely. So, for instance, in the case of Talkeetna, they could receive revenue sharing under current laws, or they couldn't?
They could not because they're within an organized borough.
Okay.
Representative Ledoux.
I want to make sure that that's just a statutory provision under the current law. That's not something constitutional or anything. That's something that's a policy decision that could be changed or could not be changed as the legislature deems appropriate. Is that correct?
Representative Ledoux, that's exactly correct.
What would it?
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What would it and how would that happen? How could we do that?
Well, you'd have to define through the chair, Representative Newman. You'd have to define the problem is within organized boroughs, especially on the road system. What is a community versus, defining those boundaries? Since they're not an incorporated municipality, those boundaries have not been established in law. It gets very difficult determining, especially along road systems in the urban areas, what's a community and what's not an unincorporated community. For example, in Juneau, an argument might be made that Douglas is an unincorporated community within a borough. Lemon Creek in Anchorage, Girdwood, Eagle River, so on and so forth. So it's the definition defining that unincorporated community so we can make that determination. That would be the problem. But if it's defined, certainly we could fund those communities.
Thank you.
Questions? Thank you. This has added more confusion. You want to hold it? I think we're going to hold this over and then let the committee figure out how to address this. We'll get back to you if you want to.
Mr. Chairman, in wrap up, this is Representative Rokeberg for the record. I appreciate the debate here, and it's an important thing that we review all these issues. But I think that two things. I think it becomes very complex in terms of equity when you start talking about, like, federally recognized tribal entities vis-a-vis unincorporated cities within boroughs. So, I mean, how do you define that, and then where's the equity? Why not Talkeetna or an unincorporated village in the unorganized borough? So that becomes real problematic in trying to figure out who would qualify then. But also, I would just caution the committee, sometimes as a matter of legislative strategy, you should take care in trying to love something to death. If you Christmas tree something, you could choke the life out of it. So I'm just giving you a caution and some advice, Mr. Chairman. And I look forward to working with the committee and the members of the committee on trying to craft something that you're all comfortable with this. But remembering, I would like this bill to pass and go all the way through and end up on the governor's desk this year, because it's needed. It needs to be in the 06 budget. These communities need help. So let's not hug it to death. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Discussion, any more discussion here? Okay, we'll hold this bill over. Thank everybody for testifying and coming in and listening. And
let's get one we can move.
This is your stuff. At this time, nothing looks easy, so we'll just go back to the top of my calendar. We'll bring up House Bill 25. They're all controversial today, so.
We're digging deep today.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's take one non-controversial like fish tanks.
Yeah, well, the one that's easier.
Which one are we going to? 25?
Which one?
Yes. Well, HB 25.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I
Mr.
think.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Chairman, I haven't. I think Casey has copies of the CS.
Yeah, that was CS.
Yeah, I agree with it. I agree with this stuff. Did you change your mind?
I don't know. Let
me see. What's yours? No, I don't have. Just get it. Just get it. That's
what I said.
We have anybody online for
25?
It's so conceptual. Okay, you want to adopt CS for me, co-chair?
Yeah, I move that we adopt committee substitute for House Bill 25, 24 LSO 169 /L.
Thank you.
As a working document.
CS 25 is on floor here. I see we have a couple amendments in here that we brought forward, and I think there are kind of cleanup amendments also to this. So if you want to address them also, then we'll address your CS after we bring in these amendments. The motion to adopt amendment number one.
Mr. Chairman, can you identify which?
Oh, no.
I only have one.
So. It should be two. Oh.
Number two is number one?
There's, number one is the one big long two-pager what changes the fiscal year to calendar year.
Can we have an explanation on why we want to do that?
Right. We have the.
For the record, my name is Louis Flora. I'm a legislative aide for Representative Paul Seaton. This was an oversight on the part of on my part and the part of the drafter. We initially believed that to put it in line with the state's budget cycle, it would be easier on the department of revenue to have it fiscal year on a fiscal year basis, but that's because taxes collected and reported and paid on a calendar year basis, we're going to leave it in calendar year. So it's just a technical amendment to bring it up to back to statute.
Thank you.
Move motion to adopt.
Mr. Chairman, one of the advantages of sitting on a committee at 8 o'clock in the morning is you have an opportunity to amend legislation as comes through the process. Since Representative Seaton does not sit on this committee, I would support the amendment if Representative Salmon put his name on it as the person who offered the amendment, since it's kind of prerogative and traditional that members of the committee are the ones who offer amendments, and those that want to bring amendments forward work through the committee members to see if one of those individuals will sponsor the amendment. So we can strike out Representative Seaton and put someone else on it, then it would be amenable to support the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I recommend we adopt Amendment 1 to 24 LS 69 L2, Amendment 1.
Offered by Representative Salmon?
Offered by Representative Newman.
Newman, he was supposed to, yeah.
Your name starts with the wrong letter.
He was supposed to. Hearing no objection, Amendment number 1 is adopted. Amendment number 2. Was that your guess, Gabrielle?
Amendment number 2 is supposed to do what the CS was supposed to do. It's just clearing up some technical language in the CS. Either Louie or Bill can probably explain as well as I can what Amendment number 2 does.
Mr. Chair?
Was that again?
Pardon me?
Excuse me. What was that?
I was just saying that Amendment number 2 basically wordsmiths what this work draft is supposed to be doing.
You move for the...
And I'll move on Amendment number 2.
And, Mr. Chair, I object for the purposes of an explanation, a full
right.
explanation of what this does. Thank you.
Okay, and can I have somebody from Commerce, Mr. Ronson, can you please explain...
Again, I'm Bill Rolfson, employee of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. What the amendment does is, after the Department of Commerce computes what the hold harmless add-on amounts are, the amendment provides that the Department of Revenue withhold the export landing tax payment until such time we determine those fish tax add-ons necessary to bring up the small communities up to the amount they would have received had the export landing tax not been enacted into law. And what the amendment does is it has the Department of Revenue withhold that money until we make the calculations, and then it has them transfer the funds to us so that we can hold harmless those communities. After the hold harmless payments are provided by our department under the Shared Fishery Business Tax Program, then the Department of Revenue prorates the export landing tax payments by an amount necessary to fund those hold harmless payments, and then subsequently sends out those payments to the export landing tax communities.
Thank you.
Thank you. Still hold your objection?
No.
Okay. Any objections? Hearing no more, Amendment number 2 is adopted. Representative Ledoux.
I have an Amendment number 3 to the CS also that is supposed to amend section number 7 to take effect on July 1st, 2006, and the old date of 2005 is still in here. So I'd like to amend it to have the act take effect on 2006.
Is there any objections?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I object. Because I'd really like to have some discussion on this amendment, and because I had contemplated putting in an amendment myself, looking for a sunset, because the Mr. Chair, if I can explain what my my concern is, I think the purpose of this legislation is to try to create the incentives, if I understand it correctly, for communities to develop value added and move into new markets. And if I understand correctly, there are no communities that would qualify for this that couldn't find some resource or other to do that with. Is that right? And that would be a question.
Anybody wish to answer?
Well,
through the chair, Representative Sisner, if I understand what you're saying, that all the communities within the shared fishery business tax program are somehow involved in fishing to be eligible to receive.
Yeah.
Correct.
If they weren't fishing right now, they might be able to, with an incentive, go out there and figure out something that they could do.
Correct.
Okay. And in that case, I think it is wise for the state to tie resources that we give to incentives to expand what local communities do. And I like the idea of giving an extended period of time for people to get on board and to work on it, to give them some time to develop those resources. But in perpetuity, I have some problems. And maybe I misunderstand. Okay.
Representative Ledoux.
We're still on the amendment to the CS. Yeah. And all the amendment to the CS does is change the effective date when this will go into effect to 2006 rather than 2005. And one of the reasons for that is that there are going to be, even under this CS, communities which definitely lose under this program, and this is going to give those communities, for example, in Alaska, a little bit more time to prepare for what would be a significant loss of money. So that's what I'm talking about right here on section number 7. Instead of the act taking effect on 2005, it will take effect on 2006.
And Mr. Chair, so that I can understand this, this new legislation, because we haven't even gone into what the new version L does, and that's what I'm kind of speaking to, not really understanding fully because we haven't gotten there yet, but that date might make a difference in terms of, well, you know that, I don't know that, because, you know, it's your amendment. But in this, as I understand it, a population of 500 or less are held harmless. But if I understand that correctly, there's not a sunset date on that.
If we can get back to the amendment, and let me explain that.
Okay.
The fishing season has started already, so to put this in play in the middle of the year probably be wrong, and so it's moving effective date to next year to July, so that they can adjust their budgets to make sure when this comes into effective.
Okay, I'll withdraw my objection, but can we get back to this one we're talking about?
We'll get back to the bill itself after we get all the amendments that we have in here. The only question I may have, if I may, is it going to be a complicated issue for the department to put the effective date on July 1st, 2006? That's mid-season of it, no? Okay, thank you. Hearing no more objections to the changing of the 2006, we'll adopt that one. Now we'll get back to CS version 25 as draft L. And if you can explain your CS.
Well, my idea is that I wanted to hold harmless all of these small communities that are going to lose under this original scenario. And we've heard some really eloquent speeches today about how so many small communities are suffering right now. When we talked about Representative Roekberg's House Bill 49 and the reason for that. And I just can't see that at the same time that we know that communities are really having difficulties to yank what money smaller communities that they do have in order to redistribute it. And therefore, I suggested that at least for small communities with populations of 500 or less, and for small boroughs with populations of 3,000 or less, that they be held harmless. In other words, if this goes into effect, they're still going to get what they would have gotten. And so all of this complex language that Mr. Ralston from the Department of Commerce is far more capable of explaining than I am, that's what it is supposed to say. And that was LegLegal's marching orders.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question of why. First off, how many boroughs do we have that would be affected with a population of less than 3,000, and why was this added?
I'm not sure how many boroughs would be. Department of Commerce?
Four.
Is there somebody from
Commerce? Yeah, four boroughs. Can you name the four boroughs?
No, I can't name the four. I know Lake and Penn is one of them. I know Aleutians East is another one of them. I think Bristol Bay is. Looking at you, Carl.
just about guts the whole building. And who's the fourth one?
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Newman?
Do we have any... is there any fiscal note as how this would affect the bill, you know, or do we have any numbers to see how this would actually, how this is going to work and how it's going to affect things? Is there any idea to that?
Representative Ledoux?
Yes, my understanding is that this would basically give the communities who gain under it about 60% of what they would have gained under it if there had not been the hold harmless clause.
Representative Newman.
So communities like Homer, who would have gained under this, will only get in 60% of what they would without this amendment?
That's right, without the CS, correct. But as far as the state is concerned, I don't think it would change the fiscal note as far as the states at all.
Representative Salmon, you have a question?
Yeah, the question I had was when I first came in here, I thought I had it together. After the CS, now I don't have it together. Well, I think, it's a complex issue, you know. I mean, you know, it's a coastal length from one end of the Aleutian Island all the way down to the southeast area. And I think for us to make a better decision, I think we need to hold this over maybe one more time, Mr. Chairman, just for the people to understand it better, you know. I don't understand very well. I thought I did when I came here, but after the CS, now I'm on the borderline, and I'd like to, you know, explore this a little more and see what numbers that we're really talking about on the smaller villages.
I don't think you're going to get the numbers. That's been the problem from the department. They're not going to tell you how many, what the impacts are into the communities. All we're trying to do is trying to hold them harmless at 60-40. And, you know, that's been the problem all the way through this bill. They're not going to tell us what the impacts are because they can't. Or they don't want, they're restricted from doing it.
Mr. Chair, I guess if I had my way, which I don't lots of times have my way, I'd like to hear the sponsors kind of get the sponsors reaction to, I'm assuming you knew about this CS, and get that reaction and at least talk about it in this group first before we hold it.
My agreement was 500 or less, and then to see the CS and it's 3,000 with a borough in there, that was the original compromise that I had. So if the sponsor staff would want to address this, if the sponsor was aware of the CS.
Through the chair, Representative Sisna, yes, he was made aware of it yesterday morning, I guess. So, and he is aware. He's not particularly fond of the idea. He had some ideas for possible sunset dates or amendments to it, but that would, it's pretty complex right now, and we didn't want to burden it with anything further. Thought that might be the kiss of death. So he's not particularly enthralled with it, but he can live with it right now.
Okay. We had people online, but I don't think we didn't know if we're going to take testimony or not. We got about 10 people. Do you want to take testimony on?
If we do, then we can close it next time. We have a plain copy.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Do those people know, do they have a copy of the CS? So
I don't think they do. That's why I'm saying that, you know.
Yeah.
That's why we're trying to explain what the CS has done in changing it. So we want to go through all the, or we can hold it over and have them test to get the CS. What is, you know, I think the sponsor's happy, the CS maker is happy, the amendment's been passed, and I think we can move the bill. And then they can get the CS and read it. So if there's no objection, we'll entertain a motion to move it then.
I guess, Mr. Chair, just having been out there in the trenches trying to get to the place to testify and having sometimes turned your light upside down so that you can be somewhere, it'd probably be a good idea to give those people, they may be listening to it right now, at least a chance to say something.
Okay, we're ahead of schedule. We can do that. They don't have the version, but hopefully they've been listening to us close enough to hear what has happened. So, and I think most of these have testified for it before. So we'll go to Kodiak. Linda Freed, Kodiak City Manager, are you there?
I'm here, thank you. Yes, for the record, my name is Linda Freed, and I'm the manager for the City of Kodiak. The Kodiak City Council and Mayor had a chance to talk about the bill about a week ago at a work session. Unfortunately, we didn't have a committee substitute, as you've noted. The City Council asked me to go on record in support of House Bill 25. We reviewed the sponsor statement and did have a chance to talk with Representative Seaton when the mayor and a couple council members were in Juneau. And they believe that, based on the sponsor statement and the information we have, that this is, in fact, an appropriate thing to do, given the reason that the fish tax program was put into place. And that is to provide a sharing of the revenue with the communities that see the processing in their community or see the fish across their docks. And to provide them with some beneficial financial return for processing that product. And so we haven't had a chance to analyze the committee substitute. And I guess having listened to you, I'm not sure that if you hold harmless the communities that are part of the program now with the redistribution under the bill, that in fact you do anything different than you have now. So it's not clear to me that what the impact of the Hold Harmless Clause would be. But without the Hold Harmless Clause, the City of Kodiak did support House Bill 25. Thank you.
Thank you. Juanita Ayers in Anchorage, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name's Juanita Ayers. I'm with the Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference. We're the state-recognized ARDER and federally recognized economic development district for 54 communities in the Alaska Peninsula, Aleutian Islands, Bristol Bay, Kodiak, and the Pribilof Islands. I do have a copy of the CS. Originally, I was here to speak against HB 25 as written because it would have resulted in the loss of hundreds of thousands of dollars in municipal revenues to a number of communities in Southwest. As you've already heard, many of these small rural communities are in financial crisis. The CS, as I understand it, and as I've had a brief time to look at it here this morning, I think does go a long way in terms of correcting what would have been as that significant revenue loss by creating essentially a two-pie distribution. I would like some additional time to take a look at it and get some additional feedback from our communities. However, I would like to just add one additional comment, and that is that 11 communities in Southwest Alaska have already exercised their local taxing authority by implementing a raw fish tax that does create a municipal revenue stream for fish that crosses the dock in their communities but is not processed there. And so I feel like that's always an option for communities that are looking to generate additional municipal revenues. And as I understand it, the original intent of that bill was to do essentially that, was to target specifically halibut that was crossing the dock in Homer and then immediately leaving the community without any processing. So I think their municipalities have a number of tools at their disposal to create those revenue streams, and it is an option that unfortunately has not been exercised by a number of communities that could do it, but 11 communities in Southwest where it's feasible have exercised that option. So I thank you for the opportunity to comment this morning, and look forward to understanding a little bit more about what the CS involves. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to Wrangell, Julie Decker.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Can you hear me?
Yes, name and affiliation.
Okay, this is Julie Decker. I'm Executive Director of the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association. We support HB 25. I do have a couple of concerns about the amendments. I think the hold harmless for towns under 500 seems to be generally suitable for everyone. I do kind of question the allowing boroughs up to 3,000 also in the hold harmless. And I have a serious concern. It doesn't sound like there's any kind of sunset clause on the hold harmless amendment. I would like to see something along those lines, maybe tied to municipal revenue sharing programs starting up again or something along those lines. But in general, I think you guys are going in a good direction, and we do support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Staying in Wrangell, is Valerie McCandless there?
Yes, I am. Mr. Chairman and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify on this. Our city staff has put together issues that are of importance to our community, and we find that the main issue of House Bill 25, which our city does support, is to provide equity when it comes to distributing the fish tax from fresh or unprocessed seafood product. The current method of allocating the fish tax proceeds not only makes no sense, but it is unfairly distributes these tax-collected monies. It is our understanding that the current formula takes all the fish tax from fresh or unprocessed product and divides it equally between the general fund and the DCCED. The portion that goes to the DCCED is then put into a pool and is distributed based on the percentage of processed product. In other words, if a community has 10% of the processed fish tax in the state, they would then get 10% of the fresh or unprocessed fish tax, regardless of how much fresh or unprocessed fish they actually handle. This seems to be an unfair practice to communities that may offer a high-quality fresh and live product. Communities landing fresh product or product to be processed both require infrastructure development and provide jobs for the industry. National and international markets are demanding more fresh and live seafood. The state of Alaska is encouraging markets of high-quality fresh and live product, yet then penalizes communities on the fish taxes they pay. House Bill 25 will bring those dollars to the communities in which the unprocessed or fresh or live seafood is actually landed. In a time when high-end fresh products are encouraged and demanded, it is self-defeating to those communities that are trying to develop those types of fresh markets when it comes to fish taxes. There is more fish tax paid, but it goes to other communities. The City of Wrangell endorses House Bill 25 as a fair solution to the current allocation method of fish tax from the so-called unprocessed or fresh seafood. As an example, to illustrate this, you can assume that two communities in the state process the entire state's seafood product. One community processes the entire processed product, and one handles the and prepares the entire fresh or unprocessed product, each handling or processing equal amounts. Under the current method of allocation, the community that processed the processed product would receive 100% of the fish tax distributed to communities. The community with the fresh or unprocessed product would receive nothing, yet logic would tell us both should get 50%. Both communities need an investment in infrastructure, marketing, transportation, and other issues to make their particular industry work, regardless of whether it was shipped out processed under the state's definition or whether it is shipped out under the unprocessed label. Both deserve an equal portion of the fish tax distributed to the communities. Although in the real world, there are many communities in Alaska that have both processed and fresh or unprocessed product, this example should hit home how unfair the current system is and the need for it to be fixed. The City of Wrangell endorses House Bill 25 as a fair solution to the current allocation method of fish tax from the so-called unprocessed seafood. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to speak on behalf of the City of Wrangell.
Thank you, Mayor.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Newman.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this is a question more for the previous speaker who spoke about a sunset clause possibly tied to a municipal grant or municipal funds sharing process. And Ball communities would be getting the municipal revenue sharing. And if there was a sunset clause, it would increase substantially the areas that are not affected before this amendment was put forth, the CS, and these other communities would receive even less. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is the municipal revenue sharing would affect everybody evenly. So I don't know why a sunset clause would be, why we would need a sunset clause in this, because it would just take away from these communities that much more.
Okay, thank you. We're going to go to Seward to Willard Dunham. Are you there?
Yes, I'm there. Thank you. My name is Willard Dunham, and I'm on the City Council here in Seward. Our city is in favor of House Bill 25 and urge your support. We think this is a good step in our area, especially as we are a high-volume landing port, both in halibut and several other species of fish. We have one thing that I would like to say that isn't covered in here that has been a kind of topic of discussion with us here. We have literally hundreds of thousands of pounds of fish that are caught and shipped out of preliminary processed here and shipped out of the area and out of state in the from the charter facilities, the boat series, especially in the salmon and the halibut are the two key ones. And hopefully one of these days that you're going to look at this, and then I don't want to muck this bill up and around because I think it's a step in the right direction in equality for all the communities, but that is an area that is growing steadily, and I hope that you will take this under consideration for future thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you. Staying in Stewart is Clark Corbridge there.
This is Clark Corbridge. I'm the interim city manager in Seward. I'd like to reiterate what Willard said. The community strongly supports HB 25, primarily because it's a far more equitable distribution method than the current system. Our city council voted on the prior version of the bill before the committee substitute came out, and they were unanimous in approving the city's support of that bill. So again, Seward strongly supports House Bill 25, both in the original version and in the committee substitute. Thank you.
Thank you. Going to Homer, we'll go to Dean Braugh. Are you there?
Hi, this is Dean Baum. I'm the finance director for the City of Homer. Our council also discussed House Bill 25 and voted unanimously to support this bill. You know, the original bill was out without the committee substitute. I wanted to point out the city of Homer, like these other communities who are on ports, have invested heavily in docks, ice plants, cranes to support the fishing industry. And the way the money is divided up currently, we're now having to subsidize some of our docks through, you know, pleasure boat fees, anything else, you know, to make things work because the way monies are coming in. Example, we had 11 million pounds of halibut went across our dock last year, and we received zero fish tax for that halibut because, as these other folks have been saying, it comes over our dock, it's put on ice, and it's sent directly out to markets for as a fresh fish. it was pointed out by, I don't know who it was, about some communities have instituted their own landing tax. City of Homer has talked about doing our own landing tax down here, but the markets between us and Kodiak and the other markets around here are so tight that if we were to institute our own landing tax, that may put us into an uncompetitive market with these other ports, and then we'd lose a large part of our volume. It may make it more cost-effective than taking them someplace else. So, again, we're in support of the House Bill 25, the way it was written prior to the Hold Harmless Clause. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Chris Moss and Homer, are you there?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's obvious from the discussions, I listened to the testimony and committee hearing at the last hearing, and it's obvious that you all understand the ramifications of this and why it's in effect and why it came into occurrence. And I think that mainly, as a committee, you have to determine if this change is really necessary. You're aware of the original intent, which was to redistribute these funds to various communities that were affected through processing. And I think that was really appropriate at the time because every community had its own processing facility. Currently here in Homer, which I'm a resident, it's obvious that things are changing. You know, fish are shipped out fresh. The processing plant that was here is burned down, and the infrastructure, the money, and the economy of the fish industry just doesn't make it worthwhile for those corporations to rebuild. And so you really have to analyze it and say, has the situation changed within the state where fish that are fresh and unprocessed become a high-value commodity? And I think that's really true. And so the reality is do you redistribute this money based on how many fish are caught in other ports throughout Alaska, or just realize that it's actually the case in Alaska that fresh fish is the highest value and is shipped out, and the communities that occurs in still incur the cost of docks, cranes, the people that live and work there, and while the definition of processing that isn't met in those communities, they still have those costs, and I think this HB 25 meets those criteria. I am concerned about the substitute. We just got it here and glanced at it, and it's not, you know, the ramifications of where, you know, who is the winner and loser in this is also not very obvious, and it just seems to me that it's appropriate to distribute the money based on the landing place and not on where the most fish are landed. And should, if you do go with this route of populations and hold harmless, that is phased out as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Buck Lakitas.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Buck Lakitas, president of North Pacific Fisheries Association of Homer. We support HB 25. It corrects a poorly constructed tax statute. People in Homer have identified this problem for a long time and how to equitably share in fish taxes for the fish products that cross our docks, and we think this bill is the best vehicle. Homer's participating in a market segment that's absolutely essential to the economic health of Alaska's fisheries. We're basically building a fresh market infrastructure. This is leading the industry out of the low-quality, low-price structure. We're utilizing our docks and transportation infrastructure to get fresh fish to market. Many, or if not most, high-end seafood restaurants only serve fresh fish. Fresh is a growing trend. It's where the value is. And it's really hard to explain to anyone why, if we're heading in this direction that, by all accounts, is where we need to head, we have a tax structure that basically penalizes our efforts. So we think this is the right vehicle. We've had this identified this problem for a long time, that we can't explain to people how fish are, this amount of fish are crossing our dock and the city's deriving no tax benefit from it. I think basically the hold harmless clause in the CS is well-intentioned, but it basically amounts to a 40% dilution and doesn't fully correct the problem. So, thank you.
Thank you. John Velsko and Homer.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, it's John Velsko. I'm a resident of Homer, and I want to testify in favor of HB 25. The reason Homer's the leading halibut land in port in Alaska is because the city made a conscious decision many years ago to invest in and maintain the necessary harbor infrastructure to make this happen. We have a very expensive ice-making plant, a modern fish dock, and security patrol of our harbor. You know, for many years, the Homer General Fund has helped pay for this. However, now with the loss of state revenue sharing, the money is becoming tight. The city's attempting to do the right things. It raised property taxes recently, and there's talk of an increased sales tax. HB 25 attempts to right a fundamental wrong in the distribution of the fish tax. I don't see why communities that have not invested in maintaining the necessary fishery infrastructure should receive fish tax revenue that rightfully belongs to responsible communities that have. As for the amendment, the hold harmless amendment, I think that's a great idea, but I don't think it should come from the fish tax revenues. The state of Alaska does have a commitment to the rural communities, but the rightful place to fund that is through the general fund, not through taking fish tax revenues from legitimate fishing ports. Thanks.
Thank you. We have one signed up in the audience, Rollo Poole.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, representatives. My name is Rollo Poole. I am executive director for the Southeast Conference. We are a membership organization of communities and businesses and other organizations in our region. We have not taken a position exactly on this bill. Our organization had its annual meeting in September, and then by unanimous vote, and also our board by unanimous vote in the following month, in October, took a position that we felt the legislature needed to take a look at the cost-sharing component of this statute. And there were many members, and two of them spoke this morning from Wrangell. Again, I don't need to belabor the point about economies. Wrangell's a town that's lost about 30% of its population in the last 10 years. It's not happy. So I think that, you know, it's tough. It's an easy choice for our group because there are cities in our region that will benefit. It's a tougher decision for your group that has to look at a bigger picture. And we'd be willing to work with the legislature, with other groups, the Alaska Municipal League, to try and find some equitable solutions. Thank you.
Thank you. No more. Is there anybody else in the audience? One volunteer. State your name and affiliation.
Chris Laddick. I'm the city manager for Unalaska. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to speak to this bill today. And it appears that the flashlight's on Unalaska. And I've heard a lot about inequities and what we're talking about here. If Homer gets quite a bit of this money, I haven't seen the numbers on it, but it appears that Homer will get a substantial amount. We're going to build an inequity into this bill because they're going to have an advantage because they're on the road system that they can deliver fresh fish. If we, in Unalaska, 800 miles from Anchorage, have to ship our fish to get to basically the same starting point, it costs us over $1 a pound to ship it on Northern Air Cargo to get it there fresh. So I'm not understanding exactly how this would make it fair. Since Representative Moses is here today, maybe he could offer an amendment to hold harmless communities under 4,500 people. We are on record as being against this. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to it, and thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sista?
Thank you. Mr. Larrick? Could I ask you, what is your feeling about the CS?
I haven't had an opportunity to read it this morning, but as I understand it, I mean, we understand that a lot of these small communities are hurting and need money. And $200,000 would be the hit for Onalaska, but it wouldn't be as serious a hit as it would be to the smaller communities. But I don't know if I have a, I don't know how it all affect, haven't seen how it affects the total picture. So I don't know if I can comment on it right now.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll close testimony and discussion in the committee here. Wishes of the committee? Representative Salmon?
I'll just go ahead and... I was scratching my head.
Oh, okay.
I'll move the CS with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Here are no objections. CS HB 25 is moved with fiscal recommendations. As amended, yeah.
As amended.
And make sure you get the signed sheet.
Bergen Canal, right?
Huh?
Bergen Canal.
Yeah. Okay, at this time we're going to drop down to Local Boundary Commission, HB 133. Did we have anybody online that's going to, were we going to take testimony, or we think we were just trying to answer some questions, right? Let's take a brief at ease. We were just... This time we're going to bring up House Bill 133, Local Boundary Commission Regs and Powers. We do have the sponsor. Who was? There he is. Do we have, we adjourned the other day, and I think we had some questions. I think everybody got their questions answered. Now we have people. I thought we didn't have any. Okay. So at this time, I think we were going to move the bill, but we had questions. Representative Newman?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. On page 2, line 4, where it says the Boundary Commission shall hold at least one public hearing, I'd like to amend 1 to 3. I think a lot of times after these meetings are heard, people in the community have a wake-up call and say, whoa, you know, and a lot of times it seems like special interest groups tend to flood certain meetings, and things happen at one meeting. And so I think 3 meetings would be better, because some of these areas are fairly large, too, and these meetings could be held throughout the community to allow more people to have a say on this. So
I can't find it.
That 1 to 3. Page 2, line 4.
Why not two?
Well, that forces that situation where nobody shows up 3 times, and that's a significant.
They didn't show up. Is that an amendment?
Yes, sir.
Is there any opposition?
I want to object just to hear. Maybe some reaction from the sponsor, if that is something that is amenable, or maybe from the Boundary Commission if they're online or in the audience.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Representative Coghill, and I put in at least one public hearing because I thought there are some areas that are probably small enough where one would be sufficient. There, I would expect that with the Boundary Commission's direction and regulation that based on the geographical size, the economic units, that if there was more needed, that they could do that. So I just settled on just at least one and give them the latitude if more was needed. So 3 could be, if we mandated 3 in a smaller area, just could be less useful, I think. So I think at least one, and that's the minimum. And my intention would be, if the geographical area demanded it, that they would have the direction to have more than one. But I'm reluctant to demand more than one. So that's just me. And having not really thought through the amendment that you proposed, I wouldn't mind having some way to give direction that if it was needed geographically, that they would have more than one. So I'm open to that.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I chose three. We could even go two would be okay. Just after one meeting, I know a lot of times this is a wake-up call to a lot of communities. They actually realize what happened in their community, and they say, man, I wasn't there. I should have been there. And, you know, we need to have at least more than one.
I would probably be more amenable to two than three.
But two is fine with me.
No objections? We'll adopt number two meetings at least. Is there? We got things to do. We have people who want to testify. That thought we'd want to move the bill, but we're going to run up against floor session here. So, should we take testimony, or what's the wishes of the committee?
Close testimony?
I thought we did last
previously.
Week.
Previously? Yeah. I missed this.
Representative Salmon, we did previously.
I think we closed the
testimony last
testimony time. Last time. And
Mr. Chairman, is there someone from the Boundary Commission that can maybe respond to that last amendment? If they're
Hey, Dan, online. Are you online to respond to the last the amendment that was adopted, at least two?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I am here. For the record, this is Dan Bockhorst. I serve as staff to the local Boundary Commission. Representative Coghill's suggestion or notion that the commission would take into consideration the geographic area is in fact the practice of the commission, where it is currently required in virtually every instance that comes before the commission to hold a public hearing in or near the area proposed for the action. Where the area does include multiple communities and a large region, the commission typically does hold multiple hearings. It is not currently required.
So you have no objection to two?
Do not believe the commission would object to adding an additional requirement. I think it would be ideal to, I want to stress that the commission's practice is that it does accommodate geographic areas. Theoretically, we could have a situation where a community proposal or a proposal that is subject to this bill would involve only a single community. In that case, it may not be practical or wise to require the commission, whose members are spread out through by law. It could become a little bit expensive if we run into those kinds of circumstances, but that has not been the typical circumstance that would apply to this particular provision.
Okay, thank you. Wishes of the committee? We want to move
for motion?
Yes.
Move we pass out of House Bill 133, version G, as amended out of committee with company fiscal notes and individual record.
Hey, I can't hear them.
No objections. Bill moves 133, and we are adjourned because we have session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.